Thank you, Laurel. And good morning, ladies. It's lovely to be here again this morning. You know, as I sat down next to Mrs. Tucker, our lovely grandma, I was just sharing that I've been given the topic, the church as a family. And she said to me, "You've had a roving life." And I thought, I have. You know, as a child, my father was transferred a number of times interstate. I went to 4 primary schools. I moved while we were in high school. And then I married Bruce, and we have lived in at least 18 homes, set up homes, packed and moved again. I have had a roving life. And I am so thankful I am part of the family of God. Because wherever I have gone, I have experienced the love of God's people. And it has been wonderful. I remember the first time I moved as a young child in school. I uprooted from Sydney and my father was transferred to Melbourne. And we left our family. I had many relatives here in Sydney, cousins, aunties, uncles, and suddenly the lot were gone. A stranger in a strange state, the writing was different. But I'm glad my parents were part of the family of God because we went to church. And you know, one of the strongest memories of the 5 years we spent in Melbourne are of a young man. He must have been probably 20. He used to come to our home regularly and he used to bring under his arm a Monopoly set. And he'd sit down and play with my brother and myself and my sister. And he always had a prize. You know, it was wartime, we never had sweets, but somehow he got a Vola Crumble Bar. And we knew one of us were going to get that. And it was something, a very, very precious memory for this young man who came regularly. Very, very happy times. And I thank God for him. He was part of the family of God and he cared for us, young children. It was very precious. He gave his time. He even gave a little gift and it meant so much to me as a young girl. We came back to Melbourne, to Sydney, and later I married and I'd always lived in the city. Married Bruce and we were transferred. He's a teacher to a place called Goolagong. And I was he got a home, a share farmer's cottage in the middle of a sheep paddock. And he'd go off to school, we only had one car and I couldn't even see another house. And all sheep, I'd hardly ever seen a sheep in my life to look at sheep one day. But we went to church, there was a little church in the town, but it was very different to what I'd been used to. Just met once a fortnight and I found coming to a town like that, if you hadn't been born in that town, you weren't accepted. The church was more a social thing. You went there to meet your friends and family, but it didn't extend to people like myself who they knew. The farmers knew we were just going to be there a few years. They didn't reach out. Somebody gave us a name of someone in Young, and we travelled down to Young one weekend, and you know, we met someone, total strangers, but we'd met them at some Saturday night function, and they took us Saturday night back to their home, a beautiful home. And they said to us, "Look, we get up early in the morning and we go to Sunday school, but you stay in, no need for you to rush off, come an hour later, just lock the key and bring it with you." And you know, we went to bed and early in the morning, they got up very early, they said, "You sleep in." And after they'd gone, I sort of pinched myself. I thought, here we are in this beautiful home. They don't know us from a bar of soap. And they've trusted us. They've accepted us. Because we're part of the family of God. I'm so glad I'm a part of the family of God. I have been on the receiving end so many times. You know, love needs to be received and it also needs to be given. To be fully whole, we need not only to receive love, but to give love. And that is a very strong memory. You know, later, 30 years ago, we went to New Guinea, again leaving family. I don't know whether many of you have had the pain of saying goodbye, whether it's even just into the country, but it is a very real thing, isn't it? The pain of saying goodbye. One thing I love about heaven, and I love to think of it, there will be no more goodbyes. But we went to New Guinea, and there's a very precious promise that if you give up father and mother and brothers and sisters, that in this life God will give them to you. And I found that to be true. As we taught the Word of God in New Guinea, Over the years, God gave the increase and many people came to the Lord. And, you know, just last year we went back, and what a joy it was to see some of my brothers and sisters. They are just like brothers and sisters now. Some of the older women I used to call Mama. And these men that came to the Lord about my own age were truly just like my brothers and the women like my sisters. And when we went back last year, as we said goodbye, the tears flowed and we hugged each other. You know, it's not cultural to hug across the sexes, but these were my brothers. They truly were. And they hugged me and I hugged them and the tears flowed. It is a beautiful thing to be part of the family of God. It's a very real thing. Recently I was at Dulcie Keys' funeral. She's a very dear friend who lived in the Brookvale area and she died of a tumour on the brain. And standing beside me was my son-in-law, T. Smuller, and he said, you know, when we came out from South Africa, he'd come with his family as a little boy. He had left everyone. He had no family, his family had come alone, no family had left all their relatives in South Africa. He said, we went to Brookvale Chapel. And the very first day we met Dulcie Key, and he said, she didn't know we were coming, but Dulcie, who had four children of her own, said, come home for a meal. And he said, I've never forgotten that. And he said, from that time on, Dulcie's home was my home. His mum used to work. Dulcie had that open home, not only for Keith, but for many, many others. What a wonderful thing. What a wonderful testimony Dulcie had. I remember listening to Gert Bahana. She was a converted alcoholic. She came to know the Lord at the age of about 53. And she said, I can go into any group of AA and know that I will be received with warmth. She said, I've never been to one AA meeting where people haven't reached out in love and warmth and caring to me. But she said, unfortunately, I cannot say the same for many churches that I have been in. It's sad, isn't it? I remember talking to my neighbour across the road when I lived up here at Gorick, and I encouraged her to come to church many times. I said, why don't you come with me? She said, I know where your church is. One day I'll come. Monday she came, and unfortunately I was elsewhere. You know, Monday morning she said, I'll never go back to your church again. She said, nobody ever spoke to me. Never forgotten that. And no way could I ever get her back in that door again. Nobody ever spoke to me. Remember being in New Zealand and we were travelling with our family and we were hitchhiking actually a long time ago, but we'd been staying in youth hostels, hitchhiking, and just the language, not used to the language we heard for a week. And we saw this church with a great big banner out. It was almost from here. It would have been from here to the wall, a huge banner advertising this special service and saying everybody was warmly welcomed, please come. So we decided to go, and we had to walk quite away from the youth hostel in the morning, a mile or two to the church. And we all sat there, the four children ourselves. And afterwards, when the service finished, I was just longing to greet someone, just to say hello and just have a little talk, even about anything. And, you know, we were in the back row and I looked around and everybody in that building, big building, was talking. And people started to walk out the back. They walked right past us. Nobody even glanced our way. Everybody was so busy talking to each other. And we moved out, we stood in the foyer, we just stood there, the four children. I just thought, I hope somebody talks to the children. Not one person did. We stood there for a while and in the end we wandered off back to the youth hostel. You know, we'd planned, we normally go to church twice on Sunday. I didn't feel like going back to that church at night, and I didn't. And we were Christians. But those people in the church mightn't have known. We could have been anyone that had walked off the street. I have been, as I say, on the receiving end so many times. Just one more little example. When we were in the US, we were on our way to Africa and we found it was cheaper to travel by the US rather than go Sydney-Joburg return. So we decided to go via the US, thing it was $400 cheaper, and have a holiday on the way on the Greyhound buses, just get a cheap ticket and have a look at America. And you know, we've done the Grand Canyon this day, and it's quite a walk down there and up, and we just rough up to the top of the canyon as the bus was pulling out the Greyhound, so we jumped on without having a wash. Then we sat on that bus for 2 or 3 days till we ended up at Seattle, 2 or 3 days and nights without getting off. When we got to Seattle, it was Sunday morning and we were going to go to church. It was about 5 o'clock and my baggage had gone. No, nothing to change into. And while we'd been at the Grand Canyon, I'd been sprayed by a skunk, if you know what that is. That was the night before, and I had washed my clothes twice the night before we set off, but it was still lingering on the boot. And I was in hiking boots. And I wanted to go to church, but I said to Bruce, you go, I'll wait in the bus station. They said it'll probably be on the next bus. So Bruce went up to church. You know, we spent all day in that bus station. It didn't come. And in the end, the guy said, look, go on to Vancouver. I'll send it on there. So I hopped in the bus and it was night time. It was time for church in Vancouver. And I said, look, I just want to go to church. I just hang it all. I'll just go. Boots and all, in grotty clothes. And anyhow, we found a church. And it was a very fashionable church. And after the service, I could see people looking. Nobody spoke. We stood there for a while and Bruce and I made our way to the bus shelter across the road. It was winter, it was January, freezing cold. And we sat in the bus shelter and waited for a bus to take us back to the depot to see if my case had arrived, my rucksack. While we were sitting in the bus shelter, a car pulled up and somebody said, didn't I see you at church? And I was a gentleman. And I said, and we said, yes, we did go. And he said, well, would you like to come for a cup of tea? And I said, I'd love to. I'd really just love a cuppa. And we told him our story. I said, look, my clothes have gone missing. And I've only got one I sort of stand up in, and I've been in these clothes for about 3 days and to boot climbing the Grand Canyon. He said, listen, just come home and have a cup of tea. And he took us home and he was talking, you know, he was a doctor, he was a specialist, he was a surgeon specialist. His wife was on night duty, she was a nurse. He said, look, please stay the night. And he said, let me wash your clothes. He said, just chuck them out the door, I'll wash them for you tonight when you get into bed. And I was so humbled, you know, I stripped off and carefully opened the door and and I said, we really need to get on the road early in the morning because of our connection. I just hope and pray my clothes have turned up. You know, in the morning early, he said, I'll wake you. In the morning early, outside the door, was a pile of freshly, not only washed, he'd put them, he'd stayed up at night, he'd dried them, he'd even ironed them. He'd done it himself, outside the door. And he rung up, he said, I've rung the bus depot and your clothes are there. I have been on the receiving end so much of being part of the family of God. When I came back from New Guinea, we were working over here and I made it our habit. We made it a habit to have a stretchable lunch. You know what that is? You've got ice cream for dessert. You can always have another scoop. In summer we had salad. You can always add another lettuce leaf or cut up another tomato or another slice of Devon. And in winter we had soup and you can always add another cup of water and another soup cube to make it go further. But it meant we could invite any stranger. It meant we could invite we had some single people in our church. We had a dear old bachelor, Mr. Mack, and some of you would know him, but he lived alone. And we really enjoyed having people home. We had an open home and many, many people came. And you know, as you refresh others, you yourself are refreshed. It's a wonderful opportunity, a privilege to have people in your home. I did get involved in AA and Al-Anon, and as I listened to the stories of women there, often they would have to run out at night because of violence, sometimes with children, sometimes sleep under the house, sometimes find a telephone booth to sleep in. And God laid it upon my heart and my husband's heart to provide accommodation. We had a big caravan and people were free to come in here of the night and stay so that they could have some shelter and stay. And we did take in people. You know, there are many people through no fault of their own have no home. I remember the school counsellor ringing up one day and he's saying, this girl has just been put on the street. No fault of her own. Her dad had walked off years ago, the mother was an alcoholic, mother had hitched up with somebody else who didn't want the kid was put on the street. Lovely girl at 15, an only child. We had the joy of having that girl living with us for quite some time till we went back to New Guinea. God has given us homes, and it's a wonderful thing to be part of the family of God. You know, I was saddened. I was at a church recently up in the northwest, and I was talking to a farmer. He said, "I've always lived in this area, born and bred." I said, "Do you know most of the people in this church?" Oh, he said, about 80%. He said, "I never bother with the itinerants." I think that's sad, isn't it? My son was one of those itinerants. He's a teacher. And as a teacher's wife myself, I know how lonely it can be being uprooted from your own natural family. Just on Friday, I was at a missionary ladies meeting, and a lady, I thought, "No, I don't know that lady. I'll go up and introduce myself and ask her who she is." And she told me her name, and I still didn't know her. And she said, "You know, I prayed for you for many years." And I just felt overwhelmed. The last thing I'd like to share with you is the wonderful thing. You know, as families, we often pray for our family, don't we? We pray for our family. Here was this dear lady. I'd never met her, but for years she's prayed for me. What a wonderful encouragement. And I pray that we may be women of prayer who not only pray for our own families, but we pray for one another. Because God answers prayer. He is the living God. I'm so glad I'm a part of the family of God.